All right. So as you can see, we have a lot to do tonight. We have a lot to do tonight. I hope we get to everything. And I hope we get to everything. And or I'll say like this. I hope we get to everything before anybody falls asleep. But we definitely will get to everything. The as we found is kind of the pattern as we've been going through this series that, by the way, if anyone needs to catch up in any part of the series, we're talking about what the Messianic era is going to look like. All of the lectures are on the yutorah.org website. You go on the website, you'll find many, many different classes, including many classes from the scholar residence we had the other night from Rav Shai Schefter, his father, all the Rosh Hashiva of David Hirsch, my Rebbe. It's an amazing website just to peruse around and find some classes that you'll be able to enjoy. And our series is all on there. You just look under my my page. And as we found, as we're going through this series of trying to understand what the Messianic era is going to look like, where last week, for example, we were talking about whether or not we'll have an evil inclination. Maybe we'll have still a drive to do the wrong thing. Will we still have lust and desire that are just physical in nature or just not grounded in what's right or wrong, but rather what I desire? Will that still exist in the Messianic era? Will it not? Where we gave two approaches, where the Rama was saying from a more rational perspective that, well, being that we're going to have such clarity in the world to come, that we'll still have our humanistic desires. It's just that we're going to be less likely to act on them because the decision as to what is right or wrong is just going to be so much more clear to us to a level that even the greatest of our history never experienced, maybe aside from Moshe Rabbeinu. But the clarity we're going to have in terms of that closeness to Hashem, having God's wisdom, and that guiding our decision-making is going to be the overriding factor. And the likelihood is going to just be so much less that we give in to those baseless desires. But it doesn't mean that it's going to go away completely. As opposed to the Ramban, Nachman, who said, what do you mean? It's a verse in the Torah. The Torah says that during the Messianic era, Umal Hashem lokecha es levavcha ves levav zaracha, that God is going to remove the foreskin of our heart. And the Ramban says that means that we're not going to have any desires to do the wrong thing. We're going to revert back to the original plan of what it was supposed to be like living in the Garden of Eden, what Adam and Chava experienced before they eat from the Eitz Hadas, before they ate from the Tree of Knowledge, where they experienced this reality of everything in the world was just black and white. It was true and false as opposed to good and bad. And what we are now experiencing and the reality we live in is that things are good and bad, and it's up to us to figure out what's good and what's bad and to make a choice between the two, where they were living in an experience of truth and false, and falsehood wasn't even something that motivated them. It wasn't something that motivated them at all. So that's what the Ramban said, which again is just so much more difficult to understand exactly what that means. But as we pointed out, the Rambam and the Ramban each have sources that back them up, and I guess we'll have to see who's right when Mashiach comes. One of the things we could look forward to is to find out who is right in this discussion between the Rambam and the Ramban. But in that discussion, it really opens up a really interesting topic, which is that according to certainly the Ramban and even the Rambam on some level, there's going to be, you know, at least according to the Rambam, there's going to still be a sense of reward and punishment because, right, we'll still have a pull one way. According to Ramban, that concept even falls away completely, right? There really is no more reward or punishment because we can only get rewarded if we're conquering, if we're battling against a desire to do the wrong thing and we conquer over that, we'll get rewarded for it. So that seems like it's going to fall away according to Ramban, which then just brings up the question of, well, will there be observance of mitzvot at all? But like, what then is going to be the purpose of mitzvot if on some level we know that mitzvot have to do with self-perfection, have to do with closeness of God. It has to do with of sur meira, of leaving behind, straying from the negative, and asei tov, and doing good. Where if we're living in a reality that everything is perfect, then perhaps the concept of mitzvot in general fall away. So it's funny, the title I gave the class is, will we still observe mitzvot in the Messianic era? Or is that just a crazy question? If you ask the Ramban, that's not such a crazy question. It's not such a crazy question. So that's what I want to focus on. That's what I want to focus on tonight. So we'll begin like this. There's a the Rambam, in his description of the Messianic era, he writes black and white what we would assume that he's going to say, which again, in the worldview of Maimonides that we've been discussing so far, in what the Messianic era is going to look like, is that it's going to be regular, normal life with intense clarity. Which means then, to answer this question right off the bat, we should say, then of course, the Rambam is going to say that mitzvot will continue to be observed in the Messianic era. That's exactly what he writes. He says, HaMelech HaMashiach, this is in the 11th chapter of Hilchos Malachim, where the Rambam is discussing the Messianic era. He says, HaMelech HaMashiach Asid La'amod, that the Mashiach is going to come. Ulahachzer Malchus David Liyoshne is going to reestablish kingship from the house of David, Lemumshelos HaRishona, that's going to recreate governance in the land of Israel. Bona HaMikdash U'Mekabitz Nitche Yisrael, build the base HaMikdash. He's going to lead the charge of bringing the Jewish people back to our ancestral land, the land of Israel, with complete sovereignty. Ko v'chozrin, and this is the key line, chozrin kol hamishpatim biyomo kishu mekodem. All of the statutes, all of the laws are going to be reestablished the way they were from back in the day, meaning all of the laws that have to do with the land of Israel, the Beis HaMikdash, all of those laws are going to be resumed again. Right, just pretty much about half of the 613 mitzvos have been sitting dormant because of the fact that we don't have a temple, we don't have complete sovereignty of the land of Israel, we don't have more than 51% of world Jewry living in the land of Israel in their regional lands of the 12 Shvatim, being that those realities don't exist in our current state of a pre-Messianic era. When Mashiach comes, it's going to return back to that reality. So the Rambam saying black and white, that of course, not only will there be mitzvot observed in the Messianic era, this is one of the hallmarks of the fact that Mashiach is here, is that all mitzvot will resume, or we will be able to access all 613 mitzvot. All 613 mitzvot. And that's what he writes. He says, Makriv and Karbanos, we're going to bring all the Karbanos, all the offerings. Osen Shemitin Vioflos, by the way, next week, we're going to discuss that line when he said that we're going to bring Karbanos, because there's a line in the Mor Nevuchim that seems to contradict it. The Rambam, the Guide for the Perplexed, seems to suggest that we will not be bringing Karbanos. We won't be bringing offerings during the Messianic era. So that's something we're going to have to revisit probably. Oh, I'm sorry, not next week. Just a housekeeping note. I'm going to be in New York for Sam Mersnikoff's wedding next Wednesday night. So class is going to resume the week after. So we have 2 weeks to think about the question about whether or not we're going to be bringing offerings in the Messianic era, Karbanos, okay? And then he says, V'osin Shemitah and V'yovlos, the laws of Shemitah and Yovel are going to resume. All 613 mitzvos. This is part of what we're longing for Mashiach's arrival. The Rambam doubles down on this, although he wrote it earlier in his life when he was 31 years old. He wrote his commentary on the Mishnah that was written in Arabic because it was written for the layman, the Arabic layman that had trouble learning because of a lack of education, had trouble learning the Mishnah and the Talmud. And so the Rambam wrote, 31 years old, incredible, wrote a volume that explained every single Mishnah, meaning all of oral law, spanning all 63 tractates, translating it into Arabic, and then giving the bottom line halacha that comes out from that Mishnah. And then in addition to that, he wrote two major introductions on that work. And he's a young adult at this time, writing two major introductions on that work. One is his Perush Mishnayos, which is basically a summary of what the halachic system is. And then he wrote another introduction specifically to the end of Masechta Sanhedrin that deals with these topics of what Olam Haba is going to look like, what Messianic Era is going to look like, what is Gan Eden, what is Tchias HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead. These topics, or Gehenna, heaven, hell, all those topics, the Rambam wrote an introduction to all of these topics called the Shmona Prakim, that there is where he outlines the 13 principles of faith. The 13 principles of faith, that the basics of Judaism. We believe in one God, we believe in the unity of God, we believe that the Torah is unchanging, we believe that prophecy is legitimate, that God actually spoke to people and gave prophecy, and the prophecies that they gave was legitimate, that we believe that Moshe was the greatest prophet that ever was and ever will be, that we believe in a reward and punishment, we believe that the Mashiach is going to come, we believe in the resurrection of the dead. The 13 principles of faith, the Rambam outlines, again, 31 years old, outlines all of this in his introduction to the last chapter of Masechta Sanhedrin. So over there, the Rambam doubles down on this concept as well. And he says that the Torah we received from Har Sinai, he writes that, Hatek vuhu ki haTorah hazos, that this Torah we have, mu'tekes me'es habore, was given to us straight from God, Hashem Yisbarach. Lo mizulato v'ale, there's no change to it. V'alea in lahusif, we can't add on to it. U'mimena lo ligroa, we can't detract from it. Meaning that the Torah we have, that we received from God at Har Sinai, is never changing. Our observance of that Torah is never changing, which means forever. Means forever. That's even during the Messianic era. So the Rambam is very clear on this matter. The problem is, and there's always a problem, the Rambam has to deal with a statement that's made in Masechta Nida, almost at the very end of Shas. It's like the Rambam almost got away with it. It's like one of the last statements that's made in the entire Talmud is the following. The Gemara has an absolutely fascinating, fascinating discussion about the material that is allowed to be used for making a shroud. That God forbid somebody passes away. We know that they're buried in just a shroud. And the Gemara has a discussion about whether or not the material of that shroud can be shatnez, the mixture of wool and linen. We know the Torah tells us, beged shatnez loyal alecha, you're not allowed to wear garments that are a mix between wool and linen. So the question becomes, is one allowed to bury someone in a garment made of wool and linen? It's a discussion right here, straight up in Masechta Nida. So the Gemara writes the following. It says that a beged she'ibed bo kilayim, that if you have a garment that has a mixture between wool and linen, says the Gemara, osi mimenu tachrichen lemes, you're allowed to use it to make tachrichen. You're allowed to use it to make a shroud for someone who had passed away. Continues the Gemara and it says, lama tachrichen lemes. You're allowed to make it for someone who passed away. Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, what's the reason? Why is it that you're allowed to dress the mace in a shroud made of shatnez? Says Rav Yosef, Zosomeris, because this tells me that mitzvos betelos la'asid lavo, that there's not going to be an observance of mitzvot in the world to come. It's not going to be an observance of mitzvot in the world to come. Now, When the Gemara here says La'asid Lavo, Tosfos says it means that in Shamayim, like in the next world, there's not going to be an observance of mitzvah. But it's very hard to assume that that's what the Gemara is talking about. In fact, he stands alone. The rest of the Rishonim say that can't be what the Gemara is talking about, because of course there's no observance of mitzvot when a person is dead. When a person is not living, of course there's no observance of mitzvot. So it must be that the word la'atid lavo, in the future, must be referring to something else. Well, what can it possibly be referring to? It has to be referring to a time where where someone is actually alive and doing mitzvot. That has to be then, the only option left is the Messianic era, the days of Mashiach. Now, let's just stop here for 1 second. Or actually, you know what? Let's continue. The Gemara then has another opinion. The Gemara says, Amalei Abaye, Lo Shanu El Lesapto, Valakovro Aser. No. When it comes to burying an individual, you're not allowed to bury them in Shana. So you have two opinions here. We assume, says the Gemara, we assume on Rabbi Yochanan, afil lekovro. We assume, like the first opinion, says Rabbi Yochanan, that you're allowed to bury somebody in Shatnez. This means that there's not going to be observance of mitzvot la'asid lavo what seems like in the Messianic era. So what's the Rambam going to do with this? Gemara. Now, one could assume, again, let's talk out the Gemara one more time. The Gemara presented two opinions about whether or not you're allowed to bury somebody in Shatnez. Shatnez is a prohibition. Are you allowed to bury somebody in Shatnez? There's going to be a time where this person who's going to be resurrected in the resurrection of the dead during the Messianic era, is then going to be wearing this shroud made of shatnez at that point. So there's two opinions in the Gemara whether or not you're allowed to bury this person in a shroud. One opinion is that of Rav Yosef and Rav Yochanan that says that one is allowed to, one can, because there's not going to be an observance of mitzvot at that point in history, later, future, by the Messianic era, as opposed to Abaye, who says that no, one is not allowed to bury their loved one in shroud, seemingly taking the approach that mitzvot will still be observed. Now, there's two opinions here. Based on what we said before about the Rambam, that mitzvot are going to be observed in the world to come, what would you assume the Rambam would decide in this discussion? You would assume that he'd say that one is not allowed to bury their loved one in shatnez, because he says that mitzvot will be observed in the world to come. And then therefore, during the resurrection of the dead, this person is going to be wearing something made of shatnez. That's a problem, because mitzvot will be observed in the world to come. Except that's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam writes in the laws of shatnez, he says, Mutar la'asos min hakilayim. It's in the 10th chapter of the laws of shatnez. He says that one is allowed to make a shroud of kilayim, of shatnez, tachrich and lames, she'ein al hamesim mitzvah, because mitzvah do not apply to a mace. Mitzvah don't apply to somebody who had passed away. Therefore, the Rambam says one is allowed to make a shroud out of shatnez. Hold on 1 second. What's going to happen during the Messianic era? During tachrich hamesim, person's going to be resurrected, and then they're going to be wearing shatnez. The Rambam is saying here, no problem. It sounds like he's taking the approach that there's not going to be an observance of mitzvot in the world to come. But then the Rambam earlier said that there will, of course, be observance of mitzvot. So which one is it? Okay, so let's get to.
Yeah. Because we've talked about the Messianic era, for a couple of weeks now. But you've never said anything that resurrection of the dead is that
after? Right. I was waiting for somebody to ask me. So that's a question we're going to have to get to when we discuss Tchias HaMeisim. Just spoiler alert, the Rambam assumes that not necessarily they're going to happen at the exact same moment, but Tchias HaMesim will be included in the Messianic era. That the Rambam writes that will be those two things will come hand in hand. They will overlap with one another. They will overlap. So how are we going to resolve this issue? Yeah, Marty.
So that just make a simple solution and say it changes clothes.
Oh, so let's get to the solutions. So. So let's get to the solutions. Number one, I should point out that Rav Yosef Karo quotes other opinions that argue on this point and say that we paskin we are not allowed to bury somebody in Shabbos. He quotes from the Rokeach, for example, that's the case, but he himself paskins, the Shulchan Aruch assumes like the Rambam that you can bury somebody in Shabbos. So how are we going to deal with this seeming contradiction? So the first answer we'll give is from the Rashba. The Rashba, Rabbeinu Shlomo ben Aderet, passed away in 1313, was the chief rabbi in Barcelona, in Spain, was really the chief rabbi of all of world Jewry at that point, was an incredible genius, where he basically took the reins from the Ramban, Nachmanides, who was his teacher's teacher, but he kind of took the reins from the Ramban, is becoming the next great amongst the Sephardic world and really the Torah world in general at that point. The Rashba was incredible. So the Rashba writes the following. He says that what are we really arguing about here? Like, in this discussion about can I bury somebody in Shatnez, can I not bury somebody in Shatnez? Okay, so what's going to happen, right? Everybody brought up that what's going to happen, okay? The fellow is going to be resurrected, and then they'll change. They'll get changed, right? What's the big deal, right? They'll get changed. By the way, it's a fair point. There's a Gemara in Masech Brachos on Daf Yud Zayin that the Gemara over there talks about a scenario where, let's say, I see a friend of mine out in the marketplace, and I know that the coat they're wearing is a coat made of, or the shirt they're wearing is a shirt made of shanas. Say I see them, I know that they're wearing something made out of shanas. So what am I supposed to do at that point? What am I supposed to do? So the Gemara says that, well, if I see them and I know they're not going to listen to me to take it off, then it's going to sound crazy. Mara says, take it off of them. Save them. Save them from the prohibition. Okay. Then the Gemara says, what if I'm in the marketplace? I'm at the mall, and I'm wearing whatever I'm wearing. I'm wearing a new suit, shirt, whatever. And I'm window shopping, and I see in the display at Brooks Brothers the same suit I'm wearing that I just bought last week that I'm very proud to be wearing. And I see big advertisement, 100% shotness in the window of Brooks Brothers of the suit I'm wearing, right? You've never seen Brooks Brothers advertise shotness before. 100% shotness, and I see this myself. Am I supposed to just strip in the middle of the mall? No, it sounds crazy. But Chaim Soloveitchik said, well, what's the difference though? On the one hand, I'm supposed to encourage my friend to take it off. But when it comes to me, I leave it on. What's the difference? So Chaim Soloveitchik, genius, is actually quoted by one of his students, Shlomo Hyman, Zatzal, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, and incredible. So he quotes Reb Chaim Soloveitchik in his work, giving the following explanation. He says that when I see this advertisement from Brooks Brothers, what does my mind go to with regards to the way I was thinking about my suit to how I now am thinking about my suit. In the past, before I saw the sign, the way I'm thinking about my suit is this is a great suit. I love this suit. It's nice, comfy, warm, whatever. Look good. It's a great suit. After I see the sign, what's the last thing I want to be wearing? The last thing I want to be wearing is that suit. My intention for why I'm wearing this item has changed. In order to violate Shanis, I need to be getting benefit from this. I need to be getting a physical benefit from this, from what I'm wearing. So therefore, if I know I'm wearing Shanis and I'm doing it anyway because I like it, that's a problem. That's like my friend who, even though I'm encouraging him to take it off, he's like, no, this is great. I love this thing. That's a problem. That's a big problem. But when I see the suit in the window display, and now I know what Sean is, what's the reason I'm wearing it? It's not for a physical benefit anymore. It's an emotional one. It's for my dignity. That's the only reason I'm wearing it. There's no prohibition of wearing shatnez for one's dignity. It's a prohibition of wearing shatnez if it's for my pleasure, not if it's for my dignity. That,
where's that?
Where it's a straight Mishnah in the, it's a straight Mishnah in Masechta Kelayim. It's a straight Mishnah that says that it's only a prohibition of shatnez if I'm getting physical pleasure and benefit from, like, warmth from it. Like, the Mishnah's example is you have somebody that is selling shatnez. So you have someone they're carrying all their shatnez that they're selling. So that's not an issue. But when you understand the halacha, it's to get benefit from it. To get benefit from it.
So the dead person.
Now getting back to what we were talking about. Very good, Nora. So now getting back to our guy, right? When he wakes up, he's the last thing he wants is to be wearing shatnez, right? Okay, so get him a pair, get him something to change into. He'll get something to change into, right? So if that's the case, then why is this even a discussion? But whether or not I'm allowed to bury somebody in shatnez or not, what difference is it gonna make? What difference is it gonna make? Jack, you had a question? Okay, that is because that's a special exemption. The Torah, the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Hey says because the Torah puts in Parshas Kitisa Kitetze, it puts the mitzvah of wearing tzitzis next to the prohibition of wearing shatnez, that tells me that this is an exception to the rule. So. Possibly, but we don't have any sources that would indicate as such. Yeah.
Does anybody remark on the fact that the only thing you know 100% in the situation is that the garment will disintegrate and not be visible time?
Except for the fact, well, we do deal with it because the Gemara says on Daf Tzadi Beis in Masechta Sanhedrin that they wake up clothed. Presumably they're waking up with whatever they were wearing. Yeah, two opinions are there, whether or not they're waking up with something new. So that would resolve the issues. But there is an opinion that says they're waking up with whatever they were wearing. Okay, you know what? If Hashem could revive the dead, he could bring the clothing back to life too. That's much easier, I guarantee you. Yeah, that's much easier. That's much, ask the doc, right? You're the doctors in the room will tell you, right? Like, that's much easier is to put a piece of clothing back together than it is to put a life back together. So how are we going to resolve? So that we were dealing with the question of, so then what's even the issue here? But burying somebody in a shroud that would be made of shatnez, why wouldn't it be a problem? So the Rashba gives an incredible explanation. The Rashba says that the whole discussion here is there is a Gemara in Masechta Yevamos that talks about whether or not I'm allowed to give non-kosher or allow a child to violate something in the Torah. Can I give a child something that's not kosher to eat? The Gemara talks about this in the end of Masechet Yevamos on Kuf Yud Aleph. And the Gemara says, no, it's one is not allowed to. In fact, there are opinions that say that this is a prohibition from the Torah. Well, why? Meaning, the child is not obligated in mitzvot. So why can't I feed the child non-kosher? This is the Gemara makes it clear, it learns from Psukim, one is not allowed to give a child something non-kosher to eat. Says the Rashba, perhaps that's what the discussion in the Gemara is. We know that someone who's not alive is not obligated to mitzvot. The question is whether or not I am allowed to provide them with something that is prohibited. Similar to a child, right? The child is not obligated either. There's no prohibition against the child. And if the Gemara makes a problem about that, so then why wouldn't the Gemara, why wouldn't the Torah make a problem about this, right? It must be that there's something more mystical here, that there's a problem with giving a Jewish neshama something that is prohibited. Well, the mace also, I mean, they are a neshama. We know that there is some semblance of a connection still between the body and the neshama, and that it goes through some sort of a process between the time it passes until it goes into Shamayim, and that between the burial, and that we know that it's not like there's complete, like it's as if you're dealing with a piece of wood, dealing with someone who is Achenu B'nai Yisrael, someone that we treat with dignity and respect. And perhaps it's just not in there, it's not proper dignity and respect to give them shanis. It'd be like, would we ever consider burying somebody with a pig? Right? It's like, it's just disrespectful to the mace, right? So how could we give them shanis? That is what this discussion is. That's what the Rashba says. This has nothing to do, says the Rashba, with our discussion. Our discussion about whether or not mitzvot are going to be observed in the world to come, that's that in the Messianic era, that's a separate discussion. Here, the discussion is just simply about whether or not it's within the respect we give to a mace, whether or not to bury them in shanes. And so the Rashba writes, he says, Nira lila asilavo, that when we're talking about this concept of asilavo in the time Messianic era, mishasha mace ka'amar, that at the time that the person passes away, that the opinion that says that you're allowed to is basically saying, no, once a person passes, so that's it. Meaning once they pass, then they have a disconnect from mitzvot at this point. And therefore, if it's not going to be embarrassing to the mace, meaning it's different than burying them with a pig, you're getting them dressed, right? It's you're trying to give them dignity. You're burying them in a shroud. It's part of a dignified process. It happens to be that a chan is. Okay, that's why we're not concerned about it. But there is another opinion that says, no, we should be concerned about it because we don't want to bury the person with something that's prohibited in the Torah. This says the Meshech Chachma, the Meshech Chachma written by Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, Zatzal, was one of the greatest minds of the 20th century. Early 20th, he passed away right at the turn of the 20th century. He was one of the he was one of the few people that had a close relationship with the Rugachever Gaon, Rav Yosef Rosen, that the Rugachever referred to him as the Kohen Gadol of the generation. Rav Meir Simcha Dvinsk was an incredible person that really embodied what it means to accomplish the greatest heights in Torah learning and also of application to oneself and their human character. In fact, he's the only contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim that the Chafetz Chaim quotes in his work of Jewish law in the Mishnah Berurah. The only of his contemporaries that he quotes. The Meshech Chachma is an incredible, incredible character in our tradition. So he actually says that this opens up a really interesting discussion about really what the purpose of mitzvot are. Where the purpose of mitzvot that I need to do mitzvot in this world in order so that I can get reward and build a closeness to God. And right, the reasons that we're more familiar with that we were describing before, that that's the purpose of mitzvot, or is that there is something more mystical about a connectivity to mitzvot, where even in the next world, even once a person passes, we want them to still be connected to mitzvot. We don't want them to have any connection to something that isn't the will of God. And because the soul still continues to be nourished, and whatever that means in some mystical level, even in the next world. So that's an interesting discussion of itself that we'll have to probably come back to when we discuss what happens in Shemayim. But this at least gives us one answer to the question we started with, which is, again, the Rambam said that mitzvot are not going, or that mitzvot are going to continue even in the Messianic era. The Talmud in Nida seems to suggest that no, in the Messianic era, mitzvot are going to cease to exist, which is why there'd be no issue with burying somebody in a shroud made of shatnez. We're answering and saying no, mitzvot will continue to exist. The reason why one is allowed to bury somebody in shatnez is because it's not a lack of dignity to bury somebody in shatnez, and we aren't concerned over the fact that it happens to be prohibited to wear shatnez, because that's beyond what the scope of what's expected of somebody who is taking care of somebody who's deceased. The next, we'll give one more answer. There's a number of answers to this question, but we'll give one more answer from the Ritva. And this is I couldn't believe when I came across this Ritva. I mamish could not believe it. I started laughing a little bit. It was so good. The Ritva, who was a student of the Rashba, also in Spain, a student of the Rashba. The Ritva says that, you recall, we had a discussion in Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos has two opinions as to what kind of changes are going to take place during the Messianic era. The Gemara has on Kuf Nun Aleph in Shabbos that Shmuel's statement is that there's not going to be any difference between now and the Messianic era, Elashibud Malchios Bovad, except for what is going to be governing us. Whereas now we are subject to other governments, and we're subject to other codes of law, and we're subject to anti-Semitism. We're subject to outside forces. And during the Messianic era, the only thing that's going to be governing us is the Torah. And that was the opinion we said that the Rambam follows. But there was another opinion that we brought up at the time. But there's another opinion that says that during the Messianic era, there is no longer going to be zechus and chova. There's no longer going to be reward and punishment. That was what we said. The Ramban takes that approach. But there's not going to be a yetzer hara. There's not, right? There's not going to be that inclination to do the wrong thing. And therefore, the concept of reward and punishment is going to fall away, because we're going to be reverting back to the time of living in the Garden of Eden before Adam and Chava were kicked out. Says the Ritva, that's all this machlokas is. This discussion about whether or not one is allowed to bury somebody in a shroud is dependent on that machlokas. The machlokas, the dispute that we've been talking about for the last few weeks, of what will the Messianic era look like? Will it be regular and normal? Or is it going to be that we're not going to have reward and punishment at all, that we're not going to have mitzvot in the Messianic era? Where the Ritva is basically saying that that's all this discussion is. That is, whether or not somebody can bury somebody in a shroud is just dependent upon what the Messianic era is going to look like. This is what he writes. He says, the following. He says, that while the reality that we live in is still around, meaning this world continues to exist, which includes the Messianic era, that when there's reward and punishment, so then we are not able, be able to add on or distract from mitzvot. But once we enter into a reality of that there's no more reward and punishment, so then there's nothing wrong with wearing shanas at that point. Meaning that this Gemara is all within that one opinion. It's all within that one opinion. According to Shmuel, who said that the only difference between now and the Messianic era is going to be what our governing body is. The fact that we're just going to be governed by Torah anymore, we're only going to be governed by Torah at that point, then this discussion just wouldn't even happen. This whole discussion can even come up if you take the approach that we are not going to have reward and punishment. Another way of saying we're not going to have reward and punishment is that we're not going to have mitzvot. And so therefore, you can have a discussion about whether or not one can or cannot bury somebody in a shroud of made out of shanas. The Ritva uses this as an opportunity to say to knock other religions who have thought that we can change, that the Torah is able to be changed. He writes, V'im lachoshech min mitamidei Yeshu, that there are those like the students of Yeshu, who's Yeshu? Jesus. That lo markivan sha mitzvos betelos lasilavo, that since we're not going to observe mitzvot in the future, as is evident from this statement in the Talmud, as is evident by one opinion in the Talmud and Masechet Shabbos as well, being that that's the case, so then, lo nina Torah elo lizman, that the Torah we received from Sinai was only for one period of time, the time period of Sinai, till in their eyes, Jesus. It's only during that time period was when we were subject to the Torah. Ulafikach, and therefore, Hayirushus Yeshu, therefore Jesus had the right in his mind, lohosif, to add on, uligroa mimenu, or to change things about the Torah, like the concept that somebody can die for your sins. Right? Where did he even come up with such a thing? Well, if your philosophy is that the Torah is going to change as soon as the Messiah comes, the Messiah is here. And therefore, they felt like, okay, we're just going to make changes as we see fit. Wherever we think changes need to be made, we're going to make those changes. That is where, and that the Ritva says, that was where their major mistake was. Their major mistake was they made this assumption that, well, if this guy's Mashiach, and they believed it, even though they were wrong, but what, and that's what always bothered me about it, which was, if they were all good Yiddish kinder, that all of a sudden just like kind of woke up and said, all right, we're just going to change everything. Like, where did that come from? That's what I was saying. I'll tell you where it came from. If they were convinced that he was Mashiach, Mashiach's here. If Mashiach's here, then that means no more reward and punishment, no more accountability for what I have to do, really no more responsibility for doing the right thing or the wrong thing. He dies for my sins, and now I can change everything about the Torah.
So David, it's like the Rambam's
view. It's like, what they got wrong was step one, right? But with that faulty foundation, the rest of it was rationalized.
So he didn't bring in
Isn't that fascinating? It's fascinating. Fascinating, Ritva.
Yeah. Bring in the Messianic era.
Of course not. Right. Of course. Many. The foundation. The foundation was totally a mess. Wrong. Completely. Terrible. Horrible. Horrific. The worst thing to happen to, like, human history. Horrible. But if you're going to rest on that, you're going to build your foundation off of that. The rest of it is at least reasonable to, you know, how they could have even gotten to these conclusions, right? It's you know, I'm just reading the Talmud over here, right? It's so again, it's obviously it was baseless because he obviously wasn't Mashiach, and who's to say that, you know, like Stuart said, right? Well, if he was Mashiach, then all these other things would have happened. All these other supernatural things would have taken place, and you know, and we everyone would have had clarity, and that there would be, you know, again, sovereignty of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Like everything else would have happened. So they're obviously 1,000% wrong. But if they were assuming they were right, that's what the Ritva is saying. That's why. That's how they made these mistakes. That's why the whole religion is just built off. It's built off of the falsehood. But then the mistakes that they made were built with just the just off of a wrong assumption. But had that assumption been correct, then it wouldn't have been that crazy. So it's almost like the details, says Ritva, are not totally nuts. I can get, it's like he's saying, like, I can get how they made the mistake, but obviously the foundation is completely wrong and false. And it's a shame. It's a real shame. Obviously, it's the worst thing that ever happened. Yeah.
Excuse my ignorance, but today, do we use shotness for trout?
I think that one, the point is that one can. I don't think, no, we don't. No, no. One can. I don't know if there wasn't another option. I'm sure we would have, but yeah.
So if we don't use it for shrouds, we wrap a towel that's made with shotness.
Yeah, because there, the talus is permitted to have the shotness. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so then that would be fine.
But don't they usually men are buried in their...
Yeah. Usually, sometimes it's not possible, or it's not available, or maybe they never had one. You know,
well, they have their kippah, right?
Yeah, some have the custom to do that. Yeah, some have the custom to do that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure a talus. Yeah. Yeah.
But if by saying it's okay, then you're that's sort of one viewpoint. Because the other viewpoint was the.
Yeah, so the Rambam made a stance. Yeah, the Rambam made a stance. As I mentioned, the Rokeach argues, right? Two opinions in the Beis Yosef. Shulchan Aruch says mutter. Yeah, Shulchan Aruch says mutter. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, this is a very very interesting interesting discussion. Where again, in summation, where we have a consensus about the fact that mitzvot will be observed in the Messianic era. The extent of mitzvot being observed may a little bit depend on whether or not we're just going to have complete clarity in the world to come, but it's going to be regular, pretty much normal, or like the Ramban, that we're just going to lose the whole concept of reward and punishment at all. And then if that's the case, perhaps there's room to say then that mitzvot in general will not be observed in the world to come. But as we mentioned, that the Rashba doesn't assume that's what the Gemara meant. The Rashba was assuming the Gemara was just talking about whether or not it's a proper way of dealing with a mace. It's just very isolated to this issue, similar to like feeding a child not kosher. Whereas the Ritva was saying, no, perhaps this really is part of the whole general discussion about whether or not in the future mitzvot will continue to apply. But said the Ritva, if you are within the opinion of Shmuel that says that the only difference between now and the Messianic era is just simply going to be what our governing body is. It's going to be that clarity we were talking about. So then this whole discussion doesn't even get off the ground, and that's like the viewpoint of the Rambam. So next week, as I mentioned, we're not on, and then the week after, I want to talk about Korbanot, what Korbanot are going to look like in the Messianic era. The reason it's an interesting discussion, I'll just a little bit of a teaser, is that we read in the Rambam that Korbanos are definitely going to be brought in the world to come in the Messianic era. But it's interesting because there's, first of all, there's a Medrash that says that that's not the case. Only Korban Todah is going to be brought. Only an offering of gratitude is going to be brought. And then even aside for that, well, if if you take the approach of the Ramban, definitely, where we're not even going to have a Yetzirah, we're not even going to have a desire to do the wrong thing, then what are we bringing Karbanos for, right? To come closer to God, what do you mean? We're as close as we can get. We can't get any closer. So what? Why would we bring Karbanos then? To bring a Karban Toda, an offering of gratitude, perhaps that still makes sense, because there, that's a person, I guess, still can have near-death experiences, let's say, even in that reality where they don't have a Yitzhara, right? But what about the other Karbanos, right? That what would be the point of them if we're already as close as we can get? So that's a whole discussion we're going to have in a couple of weeks, God willing. All right, we'll stop here for now. Yeah, sure. See you more.
Someone's buried a male.
Yeah.
He has a tannus.